He was still staring straight at her with an intense gaze and an otherwise expressionless face. "I think he is interested after all," she thought. Once out in the hallway, Antaska walked along next to M. Hoivel in a zombie-like daze. She didn't notice the humming noise or the whispering sounds that came when any of the Verdantes came near and then went away when they were gone. All her thoughts returned to the attractive man from the dining hall. Should I be disturbed by his bold and maybe weird behavior? Or should I be flattered? She kept asking herself. Chapter 5. Potat was waiting for Antaska and M. Hoivel when they came in the door to their shared quarters. She lay stretched out on her back on the soft floor covering in the center of the main room. Her tiny golden eyes stared up at them.
"It took them long enough," Potat thought.
"Hi, kitty," Antaska greeted Potat. "Where have you been?" Potat asked her telepathically, although she knew the answer. Both Antaska and M. Hoivel shook their heads a bit, but neither answered her. Potat gave Antaska's mind a quick scan. Antaska was thinking, "Why do I keep imagining my cat is talking to me?" And, "I wonder if I'll see that guy again." And then Potat saw an image of the hunky guy in Antaska's mind. His shirt was unbuttoned, and his muscular chest was bursting through. "Hey, he wasn't dressed like that when I saw him in Antaska's mind in the dining hall," Potat thought. She was annoyed. The little cat grumbled to herself. "Antaska ignores my advice again. I think Antaska needs to learn a lesson about that, and about leaving me here all alone." Potat flipped off her back and up onto her feet. Then, like a furry gray and white streak, she dashed through the door to Antaska's room and dived under the bed. From there, she crouched and peeked out behind the edge of a blanket. "I'm ignoring you," Potat thought at her. But Antaska didn't seem to get the message. The corners of her mouth turned up, and she had that look of someone trying not to laugh. Potat flopped down under the bed and grumbled some more. "Is she okay?" M. Hoivel asked Antaska out loud. "At least someone cares," thought Potat. "I did a good job when I picked that one." She thought about reading M. Hoivel's mind, too. He was her new pet, after all. "No, I don't know him well enough yet. That can wait for later," she decided. "Potat's fine," said Antaska, answering M. Hoivel's question. "Probably just nervous in a new place." Potat sighed a big telepathic cat sigh. M. Hoivel looked around in confusion. He thought he had just heard someone sighing telepathically. A small female sigh. Could that have been Antaska? He wondered. He looked down at her, but the corners of her mouth were turned up. M. Hoivel interpreted her expression correctly as a smile. "Maybe I imagined that. Or maybe I heard someone walking by in the hallway," he thought. M. Hoivel knew that he needed to make up for his neglect earlier in the day, so he decided to talk to Antaska as Master Meep had suggested. His vocal cords and the muscles of his mouth were already tired from the unaccustomed use of talking to her at dinner, but he was willing to sacrifice his personal comfort for her well-being. "Do you need anything, or do you have any other questions for me?" he asked. "I think I have everything I need right now," Antaska answered. "But I was wondering about the larger-sized man who came to our table at dinner, and the other group of bigger people. I never saw any Verdantes that big when I was in space school on Earth. Are they the same species as the Verdantes, or are they a different species?" The answer to this question was not restricted information, but it sometimes came as a shock to Earth humans. Most new pets did not ask it on their first day. M. Hoivel decided to answer anyway, at least part of the truth. The larger humanoids are Verdantes too, but they're much older than me. That's why they're so much bigger. Ours is a long-living and tall-growing race. We live to the age of 5,000 or more and grow to over 10 feet tall by about 900 years old. I'm 650, and I'll grow to about that size in around 250 more years, he told her. M. Hoivel hoped this explanation would be enough. His voice was getting scratchy and hoarse, and he didn't think it could stand much more use. He pressed his palm against a round, slightly raised glowing green circle on the side of the wall. A sliding panel opened, and a compartment appeared. Inside were several tubes of chlorophyll water. M. Hoivel pulled out a tube, and the compartment closed again. Antaska looked at him with her head slightly tilted to one side while he drank thirstily. Soon, his throat felt better. He looked down to see the little cat Potot creeping out into the main room. Her curiosity must have overcome her shyness, thought M. Hoivel. The corners of his big green eyes lifted in amusement. Potot sat behind the edge of the couch, as if hiding, and watched him and Antaska. Antaska covered a yawn with one hand. "Excuse me," she said. "I guess I'm really tired from all the excitement of my first day away from Earth. Thank you for explaining about the bigger Verdantes. I don't have any more questions right now." "Okay, that's great," said M. Hoivel. "You should rest and get settled in your room tonight. Tomorrow, I'll take you and Potot to the spaceship's doctor for checkups to make sure that you're both in perfect health for space travel." "Is the doctor able to treat cats as well as humans?" Antaska asked with wide eyes. "Oh, sure," M. Hoivel told her. "Dr. Daji is a great veterinarian." "Good night, then," Antaska said. She walked toward her room, and little Potot streaked in through the door ahead of her. M. Hoivel stood unmoving and still, looking in when Antaska pressed the button to close the door. He watched the lowering door slide all the way down. "Okay, I think I've got this," he told himself before walking away to his own room. Inside her room now, Antaska thought about M. Hoivel. She was more confused than enlightened by his explanation of the larger aliens. Antaska knew that the Verdantes who came to Earth to hire humans were much older than the oldest living Earthlings. So to learn that M. Hoivel was 650, a very old man, didn't surprise her. But the oldest of his race lived to be thousands of years old after growing to the height of small trees. That idea was hard to absorb. Antaska was worn out from her first day in a strange environment. She decided she could think about all this later. She walked to the bed and flopped down on her back. Potot was alert and sitting up on the bed. Antaska rolled to the side and pulled her into a gentle hug. "How are you? Are you okay in our new home?" she asked the small cat. Potot made no answer except for a contented purr. Antaska stirred herself to visit the small bathroom and brush her teeth. She changed into the tan sleeping clothes she found in drawers built into the walls of her room. Returning to the circular bed, she felt more awake again and sat up next to Potot. Antaska took a closer look at the consoles built into small tables on either side of the bed. She reached out a hand and wavered it over the many possible choices of buttons to press. Potot was watching Antaska. She jumped smoothly away to the soft, spongy floor material in a clear demonstration of disapproval. Potot sat as far from the bed as possible in the small room, cleaning between her toenails. and Tasca ignored Potat's behavior. I'm sure Imhoiva would have warned me if something harmful could happen from pushing these buttons, she thought. There were so many rows of different colored buttons. Which to push? And Tasca randomly pressed a deep blue one. The room darkened. A holographic image appeared, filling the entire room with a slow-moving view of outer space accompanied by sound. Mesmerized, and Tasca watched thousands of stars revolve gracefully on all sides of her while listening to the sound of space. A humming similar to what she had been hearing all over the spaceship, plus soft whooshing noises. The combined sounds were harmonious and soothing. It's almost musical, and Tasca said to Potat. The tiny gray cat had climbed back onto the bed. And Tasca turned to look at the Potat. She was now lying on her back too, looking up at the ceiling. Her legs and tail stretched out straight, and her arms spread out to her sides. Aw, you look so cute like that, almost like a tiny human, and Tasca told her. Then and Tasca seemed to hear a small female voice talking in her head. Please don't compare me to a human, said the voice. And Tasca looked back up the ceiling. Just another crazy thought after Minnie today, she told herself. At least I was smart enough to never tell anyone on Earth that I thought I could hear my cat talking to me. They would have never let me take this job, and now I have to do the same thing. I can't tell anyone I think I hear the Verdantes talking, she told herself. With that decided, Antasca put it out of her mind and focused on the twirling show of planets up on the ceiling and walls. The familiar desire to travel to the farthest reaches of space returned. And now, I'm really going, she thought. Any uncertainty or confusion about her new work situation melted away. Then Antasca was slowly lulled to sleep by the relaxing sounds that called to her in some deeply instinctive way. After Antasca and Potat had gone into their rooms, Imhoiva stood unmoving for several moments. The excitement of the day and the strain of verbal communication had almost drained him of energy. He thought more about Antasca. It seems weird to call her a pet when she's definitely a humanoid, he mused. She's just like a small person, only less green and with only 10 fingers. Just because she's not telepathic doesn't make her an animal or some kind of lower life form. He shook himself out of his stillness and walked into his room. I'm starting to act like the adults, he told himself, standing rooted to one spot, staring at nothing. It had been a busy day, but Imhoiva still had some homework to finish up for his galactic politics class. He sat at his computer console typing his assignment. Give arguments for or against some of the most controversial laws that govern the discovered and undiscovered planets of the Milky Way. Imhoiva was tired, but this was one of his favorite subjects. He was soon absorbed in his work with renewed energy. A few hours later, Imhoiva finished his homework and emailed it to his teacher. Then after getting ready to go to sleep, he pressed the blue button on a console in his room. Like Antasca and Potat, he also fell asleep listening to soothing space sounds to dream of new discoveries and adventures. Chapter 6. The next morning, Antasca ate another meal of different good-tasting but still unidentifiable foods in the dining hall. She was thrilled to see the unbelievably handsome human male staring at her again. The same female sat next to him glaring at Antasca, and the same tiny voice spoke in her head, telling her to look away. But Antasca didn't. Then Imhoival took Intaska back to their quarters to get Potat for their visit to the doctor. The small cat was waiting in the main room. "We're both going to the doctor for a checkup," Intaska announced. With fur fluffed high, Potat walked on stiff legs back to their bedroom and jumped up on the bed. She dug her claws deep into the bedspread and left them there. Intaska was not surprised by this behavior. "It looks like she'll have to ride in the carrier," she said to Imhoival. Intaska walked to the bed and lifted Potat up in the direction that would extract her claws without pulling on them. Did she hear the tiny voice speaking in her mind again? "You overbearing bully! Do you realize how rude this is?" "Just imagining things again," thought Intaska. She scooped the cat up and placed her in the carrier. Then she zipped it up with the quick efficiency of a person experienced in avoiding scratches. A long walk down curved, outward and upward slanting hallways led to a tall door toward the outer part of the ship. Imhoival stopped and placed his palm on a gray circle about twice the size of his hand. The circle began to glow and brighten, and then the door slid silently up and open. "Come right in," rumbled a deep voice from inside the door. Intaska, pulling the floating cat carrier, followed Imhoival into a large, circular room with a hard white floor and bare white walls. A gigantic-sized, deep green-skinned alien stood next to one of four medical examination tables. He was heavier and much taller than Imhoival, but not as tall as the giant alien who had stood next to their table in the dining hall. This alien also looked much older, with wrinkles and a head of close-cropped graying green hair. Instead of the bright red ship suit worn by the other large aliens, he was dressed in a white medical jacket, white pants, and shoes. A few medical instruments Intaska was unfamiliar with were attached to his jacket and hanging around his neck. "Who do we have here?" inquired the enormous doctor as he bent down to look in Potat's cage. "I brought Intaska and her cat Potat for their checkups," Imhoival replied. "Ah, yes. Hello, I'm Dr. Daji. Please be seated on the table with Potat so we can begin," the doctor said to Intaska. She lifted the carrier with Potat up onto the 5-foot-high examination table. Then she opened the door and reached in to get Potat. The little cat scooted to the back of the cage and growled. If she could speak, she would be saying, "Bad man," thought Intaska. Dr. Daji said nothing, but he stared at Potat, and Intaska heard faint whispering, as if from very far away. One of two whispering voices was a very deep bass-pitched male, and one was a much higher-pitched soprano female. Intaska wasn't sure, but she thought she heard the male voice say the words, "Won't hurt." The whispering continued for a minute, and then Potat stopped growling and stepped calmly out from the carrier. The corners of Imhoival's eyes lifted high. He turned to look at the doctor. They stared at each other in silence for several minutes while Intaska sat waiting. She had accepted these strange staring sessions as normal for the telepathic Verdantes, so she waited, and her thoughts drifted back to the disturbingly attractive man from the dining hall. Intaska heard more whispering, but she didn't pay much attention to it. The male and female whisperers she had heard before were now joined by a higher-pitched tenor male voice. In the midst of her musings, Intaska thought she heard the words "intelligence" and "toddler," but the words didn't make any sense, and they were much less interesting than the man who was on her mind. If Antaska had fully understood the silent telepathic conversations that just had taken place, she might have been more interested. M. Hoivel, on the other hand, was very interested in the ongoing conversation. First, he heard Dr. Daji talking to Potat. "Don't be afraid, little one. I promise I won't hurt you," Dr. Daji had assured Potat. "I only want to help you and your friend."
"My pet. My pet,"
Potat had answered possessively. "Yes, of course, she is your pet. Please forgive my mistake. I only want to help you and your pet. Will you please come out?" the large doctor had asked in his deep but gentle telepathic voice. "Not hurt?" Potat asked again. After further assurances from the doctor, she had been convinced, and she stepped out of the cage. Then M. Hoivel spoke telepathically to Dr. Daji. "Can these small creatures really understand and speak the telepathic language when they are pets of the non-telepathic humans?" M. Hoivel asked, unable to keep the shock out of his voice.
"Why, yes," was the reply.
"Although these creatures have the intelligence of a young toddler, they are telepathically sentient. But because Earth humans aren't telepathic, they aren't aware of this. And because cats don't have the vocal cords to express themselves in a way that would be understandable to them, the humans believe that cats don't have language and aren't even sentient." "It is really quite amusing that both species think they are the owner and the other is the pet," the doctor concluded with a rumbling chuckle. M. Hoivel watched Antaska take the cage off the table and climb up the steps to sit next to Potat. "We'll start with a scan," said Dr. Daji, speaking out loud. He pressed a black button on the side of the table, and Antaska and Potat were surrounded by blue light. Then a wide holographic screen appeared from floor to ceiling on one side of the examination table. The screen was filled with slowly scrolling symbols and pictures. The huge doctor read the screen, occasionally pushing a button to stop and then to continue the information flow. After a few minutes, the last of the symbols rose up to disappear at the top of the screen. Then the screen itself disappeared. Dr. Daji spoke to M. Hoivel telepathically while Antaska and Potat sat waiting. "As we expect with pets from Earth, they both have some cellular damage from the radioactive waste that still remain on the planet," the doctor explained. "Fortunately, in the 10,000 years that we've been caring for humans, we've cleaned up much of the waste left from their prehistoric wars. The cellular damage we see in humans has been decreasing, and when we take them as pets, we can give them medical treatment to repair their cells. I'll begin the cellular repair today. With the medicines they'll receive in their food, this problem should be fixed in less than a year. As suggested by your human's appearance, her DNA contains genes from both of the two separated Earth populations that survived the prehistoric nuclear and environmental destruction of most life on the planet. This includes a fine mix of the ancient races that covered the Earth in pre-apocalyptic times. If you've been studying your ancient Earth history, you may recognize some of the names of the tribes that contributed to her genetic makeup. Most of her genes are from the humans who survived in the North Pole area. These include the peoples who were known as Irish, Chinese, German, and a few others I am not able to identify. Thanks to the genetic variants and improvement program we provided humans, her DNA also includes some of the ancient tribes from south of Earth's equator. Obviously, that material was contributed from the gene labs of Earth's South Pole government. It's a very strong mix that will be a nice addition to the DNA of your own future offspring. If you'll just sign this release form giving me legal permission, I'll extract the standard genetic material for storage, including 1,000 of her eggs, which she won't miss.
This will provide you all the future DNA you could possibly need, plus extra amounts you may choose to contribute to the Verdante planet-wide genetic supplies for the benefit of our race. I'll also collect genetic material from the cat, which is rare and hard to obtain away from Earth. They don't live long, and many of our human pets become distraught at their loss. Providing them a new copy is often just the thing to cheer them up again. Of course, I don't need to remind you that we strongly advise against the same practice when it comes to replacing Earth humans. I understand that human pets have a much shorter lifespan compared to ours, and their owners often become extremely attached to them. But even a young child knows that a clone is not the same person. To recreate a new life as a twin of a pre-existing life goes against our knowledge that evolution depends on achieving ever greater genetic diversity. Don't you agree? M. Hoivel had waited politely during the doctor's long speech. The oldest of the Verdante adults were the longest talkers, he had found, but they were also due the most respect. M. Hoivel spoke in what he hoped was a polite manner. Actually, I've been thinking about this, and it seems strange to call Antaska a pet when she's really a person. I think I'd rather call her my companion instead. After all, she is a sentient humanoid, not a mere animal. Potop turned toward him and let out a small hiss, and he paused in surprise. My apologies. He addressed the words telepathically to Potop and then turned back to speak silently to the doctor. The revelation of Potop's telepathic abilities had given birth to a new and even more disturbing concern. Her cat is telepathic. What if Antaska becomes telepathic too, and finds out that we Verdantes take humans as pets? We don't hire them as they're told. I'm sure she'd be offended. And anyway, I don't think it's ethical to take her genetic material and use it without her permission, or her pet's DNA, he added. I don't mind calling Antaska something else besides pet, since someone else has claimed prior ownership, said the big doctor. He glanced at Potop with amused, upward-tilted eyes. But I can assure you it's very unlikely that one individual will suddenly become telepathic. It just doesn't happen that way. You should know from your anthropology classes that a species as a whole becomes telepathic gradually over what could be millions of years. However, I would argue that our taking her DNA is not unethical since it's no different than the current practices of her home planet. As you know, the North and South Pole Earth governments have complete control over human reproduction. All new humans are created in the birth labs from government-approved genetic mixes. In addition to sterilizing Earth humans at birth, their scientists collect much more material than what we take from our human passengers. We understand that this practice is just one of many population control measures the Earth humans put into place after the near loss of all life on the planet. They control their population to avoid the possibility of another apocalypse and the return of their civilization to a Stone Age, or worse. So they developed rather extreme controlling governments in both poles. Even though she is now legally your pet, she actually has much more freedom while living among us. On Earth, she would never be allowed to reproduce her own children if she wanted them. But we allow the humans who travel with us to make that choice. Our collecting her DNA now will allow her to have children if she ever decides she wants them. The veterinarian on the next part of your voyage will only be an apprentice and won't have the capability to extract her DNA. And if you wait till she returns from the 100-year trip, her eggs may no longer be usable. Also, you should really think about your own future children. As you know, the Verdante gene pool is limited.
We need to add material from Earth humans to ensure the continued viability of our own race. M. Hoival was not really thinking much about his future children at this point in his life. That wouldn't happen till at least 300 years from now. It seemed like an impossibly long time to a Verdante of his age, but he wanted to give Antaska the choice of having her own children in the future. He also wanted to give her the choice of cloning Potat, even though he found cloning somewhat distasteful in general. Very well, you've convinced me. I'll sign the release form for both of them, he said with a telepathic sigh of resignation. Finally, continued the doctor, they're both malnourished due to that ghastly excuse for food they eat on Earth. The humans living on Earth continue to resist our attempts to improve their diets by insisting on eating harmful garbage, he fumed. There will be no more of that now that they're in my care, said M. Hoival with an air of responsibility. I can already see an improvement from just the few healthy meals they've had so far on the spaceship. They seem perkier and more alert. That's wonderful, answered the doctor. I'll keep them here overnight, and you can get them in the morning. Since you'll be traveling through deep space, I'll put locator chips in their ears in case they get lost or stolen. Antaska was relieved when the two aliens finally stopped staring at each other, and M. Hoival turned and spoke out loud to her. Dr. Daji wants you both to stay here overnight for treatment. He needs to do some minor cellular repairs. It will be painless, and you'll sleep right through it. Will that be okay? He asked her. Antaska agreed somewhat nervously. The large alien doctor pressed another button on the exam table, and Antaska and Potat were surrounded by soft orange light. In what seemed like the next moment, Antaska opened her eyes to find herself lying on a round bed with white bed covers in a small, round white room. Potat was curled up asleep by her side. A chime sound came from the door to the room, and it opened. May I come in? Asked Dr. Daji. He peeked his enormous green head around the edge of the door. Yes, Antaska answered. The noise had woke Potat, and she looked up groggily. M. Hoival is here to take you back to your quarters now, said the doctor. Your treatment is complete, and you are both in good health for the voyage. Are you ready to go? Yes, we're ready, Antaska answered for both of them. She got up and found the cat carrier on a nearby table. M. Hoival entered the room and looked at Potat, and Antaska heard some more whispering sounds. I think she wants to walk, said M. Hoival. We can try that, Antaska answered doubtfully. Meow, 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 said Potat. Then Antaska heard that small voice in her head again. Don't put me in that cage like a prisoner. I want to walk. And stop pretending like you don't hear me because I know you do. The medical treatment has left my head fuzzy and groggy. It's making me imagine stuff again, Antaska told herself. M. Hoival placed Potat on the floor. Much to Antaska's surprise, the little cat followed them down the hallways of the spaceship all the way back to their quarters, and she didn't run off or stop to sniff and scratch at anything. Antaska considered the possibility that Potat could be more intelligent than she had given her credit for. She knew that cats in these modern times were more evolved and lived much longer than the house pets they had been in Earth's ancient days. History books said that before the Great Apocalypse, over 1 million years ago, unlike the ancient dogs, cats couldn't be trained to perform tasks helpful to humans. In the case of Potat, Antaska didn't think she was showing that she could be trained, rather that she preferred to walk. As they traveled through the hallways, they passed Verdantes of various sizes. some accompanied by Earth humans. Antasta heard faint whispering whenever they drew near. The humans stared with interest, some with big smiles at little Potot rushing along beside them with quick movements of her short legs. The tall Verdantes waved their fingers and stared silently at Imhoival, but didn't seem to notice the small cat. Back in their quarters, Imhoival noticed that Potot was tired out from the long walk. She headed straight to Antaska's bed for a nap. Imhoival felt recovered from his last big vocal conversation with Antaska, so he decided to work on some more bonding with her as Master Meep had recommended. "Would you like me to tell you some details about our voyage?" he asked her. "Yes, please," she answered. "Our first stop will be the Verdante home planet, located in the KOI 351 star system. On our way there, we've already passed some of the solar systems closest to Earth. Proxima Centauri, Regal Centaurus, Barnard Star, Wolf 359, etc. It'll take about a month to complete the trip to the home planet, and we'll stay there for about a week. When we land, some people will leave the ship and some will board, and we'll load up with supplies for our 100-year journey." Imhoival's vocal cords felt a little strained, but he looked down at Antaska and saw her staring up at him with interest, so he continued. "Then, before heading out on our exploratory mission, we'll make one more stop in known space at the Tri-Galaxy Space Station. It's about 3 months ship travel time from my home planet. We'll spend about a week at the space station, uploading the latest information on new solar systems that have been discovered. The ship's crew will plot and register our course with the Intergalactic Space Travel Authorities." Imhoival paused to grab a drink tube from one of the panel openings in the wall. Antaska walked over and climbed up to sit on the room's big couch. He took a long sip and then walked over to stand next to the couch. Then he continued. "At the space station, we'll get off the ship and stay in special accommodations for Verdantes and Earth humans. The time will go fast with exploring tourist attractions and socializing. Then we'll take off for deep space, on our way to increase our knowledge of the Milky Way galaxy and discover new sentient beings. That's the basic overview of our trip," he concluded. "Do you have any questions?" The description of the trip was all that Antaska had dreamed of. All her life, she had longed for the coveted assignment of traveling to deep space, working for the Verdantes. Forgetting about the tall Earthman who had been so much in her thoughts for the last 2 days, Antaska was filled with a new energy and enthusiasm. She wanted to get started with her new work right away. "Can you tell me what my job responsibilities will be as your assistant on the trip?" she asked Imhoival. "Sure," he answered. "Today is your first day as my assistant, and you'll experience the regular routine of a workday. After breakfast, we'll start every day with strenuous exercise in the gym. You'll be in a class with other Earth humans. I know you exercised every day when you were in space school on Earth, but this will be much more intense." "Why's that?" Antaska asked. Imhoival explained. "It's because the life-extending diet supplements you're getting in your food only work when combined with exercise. As you probably know, exercise lengthens your telomeres, the DNA molecules that affect aging. Cells die when your telomeres get too short to be able to divide, and then you get old and die. Exercise alone will only extend your life about 10 to 20 years, but the supplements enhance and increase the effect. We give a weaker formula of these supplements to the Earth governments to add to their population's food, and we encourage Earth humans to exercise regularly. This has allowed your species to approximately double its life expectancy. But we can't give humans on Earth the complete formula, because some of the ingredients are dangerous if taken without enough exercise. And we can't monitor the exercise habits of everyone on the planet. Now that you're living with us, we monitor your health and fitness level every day. This lets you take the strongest possible formula in each meal, because we measure your body composition right before you eat. So now you can expect to live at least 100 years longer than you had planned, or even more if you exercise strenuously. Antaska's eyes widened. Don't worry, we won't force you to exercise if you don't want to. It's up to you, Imhoival said. He waved his large green hands in a calming motion. Antaska giggled. He must think I'm really lazy, she thought. I'm not worried. I'm just surprised, said Antaska. I'd like to live longer, and I'll try to exercise hard if that's what it takes. That's great, said Imhoival. Anyway, after the gym, I have meetings before and after lunch. These might be boring for you, and you won't have to go to the meetings if you don't want to. I'll take you today, and you can decide. In the late afternoon, I do work on my computer in our quarters. We have 2 days of rest after every 5 days of work. Of course, our most important work won't begin until we discover new planets with humanoid species on them. At that point, you might be asked to act as our point of contact. How does that sound? He asked. It sounds fine, but is there other work I can do until then? It could be many years before I'm needed for that, Antaska asked. She didn't want to seem pushy, but she didn't want to feel useless for most of the journey. Imhoival looked down at Antaska. He thought for a moment about how to answer her question. He eased his parched throat with another sip from his beverage tube, then spoke. Yes, there is something else you'll do to help me on this trip, Imhoival began. He knew that Master Meep would disapprove of what he was about to tell her. Most of the time, your role will be something like a travel companion. I'll explain to you why this is so important. You know that the Verdantes are telepathic, but you probably don't know the problems this ability creates for us. Problems? Antaska asked. Yes, said Imhoival. On the plus side, it makes communication faster and clearer. Sometimes words can have more than one meaning, and it can be difficult to express an exact meaning within the limitations of a spoken language. But there are very few misunderstandings when someone is able to read your exact thoughts. On the minus side, being telepathic can be very disturbing. Other Verdantes can read my thoughts, and I can easily read theirs. But I don't want them to know what I'm thinking all the time, and I definitely don't want to know what they're thinking. It's worst when we're physically near each other. That's why we sit apart in the dining hall, and usually stay at least 5 feet apart, except for the permanently mated adult couples. He saw Antaska's eyes widen again. So that's why, she said. That's right, said Imhoival. You probably saw the adult couple sitting on their side of the room. They don't seem to have any problem with always knowing what the other one is thinking. It's also not as much of a problem with family members we grow up with, and children don't care who reads their thoughts, unless they're hiding something. He chuckled, remembering a certain time. But when we reach adolescence, it can be annoying, and when we leave to go on a long space trip, it becomes a big problem, Imhoival finished. His vocal cords and mouth muscles felt strained from the long explanation. He swapped his empty drink tube for a full one from the compartment in the wall and paused to gulp thirstily. He saw that Antaska was looking at him. She still seemed to be interested, so he continued. There's a way to block others from reading our thoughts. We can hold a mental wall around our mind, but it's tiring, and we can't do it all the time. So we have to stay apart a lot of the time to be comfortable. Now, because the galaxy is immense and we can only travel so fast through it, our space exploration trips are at least 100 years long. That means spending a lot of time either alone or with other Verdantes. Either way, most space explorers in the past ended up with severe mental problems after making these trips. And Tasca's wide eyes got even wider. I hope I'm not shocking her too much, Imhoival thought. But Master Meep said I should tell her about myself too, didn't he? Imhoival knew that in reality, Master Meep would most likely not approve of sharing this information, but he continued anyway. Being alone was a problem because all humanoids have a natural need to be around others in order to be emotionally healthy. And I've already explained why being close to people who can read your thoughts is a problem. He looked at Intaska for confirmation that she understood, and she nodded. We kept sending volunteers into space anyway because our species has a strong drive to discover and understand new sentient species. But the explorers came back with emotional scars that couldn't always be healed. All that changed about 10,000 years ago when we contacted Earth humans and offered them our assistance and protection. Of course, we knew you were there for a long time before that, but until then, we didn't have legal approval to contact you. The galactic authorities gave us that approval when we proved we had a genetic link to your species. At first, we wouldn't take humans into space because we thought it might be dangerous, and they might be harmed. But the Earth humans were mad to get into space, if you'll excuse that term. Thousands of them practically begged us to take them and swore that any consequence, including death, was a small price to pay for the trip. Finally, we relented, and a complicated legal agreement was drawn up between us and both your North and South Pole governments. He didn't tell Intaska the terms of the agreement. It stated that Earth humans who went with Verdantes would become legally owned by them, relieving the Earth governments of any legal liability. Imhoival decided to not mention that yet. The first trip was amazingly successful, Imhoival continued. None of the Verdantes who took Earth humans with them returned with any mental problems at all. They said that Earth humans were perfect travel companions. They were friendly and sociable. The Verdantes could be close to them without knowing what they were thinking, and vice versa. And the rest is history. Imhoival finished with a slump of his shoulders and an exhausted droop of his eyes. His powerful hearing detected a tiny sound, and he looked toward Intaska's room. Little Potot stood in the doorway looking back at him. He lifted the corners of his enormous green eyes in a friendly smile. From the doorway, Potot, still unnoticed by Intaska, stared at Imhoival. What he just said interested the tiny cat. I wonder what else he's not telling us, she thought. I should read his mind to check, just in case there's anything I need to know. After all, he's my pet too now. But first, I should find out what Intaska thinks about all this. Intaska was sitting quietly, looking at Imhoival. As she had done countless times before, Potot easily focused on Intaska's mind. Wow! This weakness that Imhoival just revealed is astonishing, Intaska was thinking. I'm so surprised to hear that these technologically superior telepathic aliens are so dependent on Earth humans. Potot detected the swell of Intaska's ego. Then it returned to its normal level when Intaska thought, that's true, but without the Verdantes, humans wouldn't be able to travel in space at all. Our technology for space travel is still limited to Earth's own solar system. At least she's not thinking about that big hulky guy for a change, Potat thought. She wiped a paw across her head to straighten down a few hairs. And Taska still hadn't noticed Potat. She spoke to Imhoival again. Thanks for explaining so much, Antaska said to Imhoival in her polite voice. I'm ready to get started on my first day as your assistant. Potat switched over to reading Imhoival's mind. I'm so relieved that Antaska didn't seem to be at all bothered by what I just told her, Potat read. And I'm glad she's so eager to get out and about the ship. So far, she's met all my expectations for the ideal pet. I mean companion. One who would be active and go with me around the spaceship and space station. Not one who would spend most of her time resting in quarters.
Well, that's kind of offensive, thought Potat.
Doesn't he know that cats need 17 hours of sleep a day to be healthy? But I guess I can forgive him since he's only thinking about Antaska this time. Thinking about sleep made Potat tired. She turned and went back inside the room and then jumped up on the bed. Potat curled up fast asleep on the round pillow, working on achieving the total sleep hours that felines of all sizes needed each day.
Chapter 7. After breakfast, Imhoival took Antaska to the gym for her first workout. It was located between their quarters and the dining hall. An open archway led into an immense room the size of an Earth football field. Its tan-colored walls curved inward and upward to a domed ceiling about 30 feet above its deep, cushioned, tan flooring. On the side of the room nearest to the door, Verdantes, close to the size of Imhoival, exercised in two separate groups with two of the larger and heavier aliens as instructors. Males were in one group, and females were in another. Imhoival led Antaska to the back of the gym. A group of about 20 humans dressed as she was in tan t-shirts and exercise shorts stood facing their instructors. Antaska was shocked to see that the trainers were the attractive couple she had seen in the dining hall. Up close, their defined muscles rippled underneath tight, form-revealing gym clothes. At about 7 feet tall, they towered over the Earth humans in the class. Both appeared to have North European ancient Earth genes. High cheekbones, light skin, pale eyes, and blonde hair, and something else Antaska couldn't identify. They both turned to stare at Antaska as she approached. Long, gold-toned hair flowed to the waist of the female. Her light blue eyes shot ice fire at Antaska. The male stared with undisguised interest in his light gray-green eyes. He ran a hand through his straight, platinum blonde hair. Imhoival spoke to Antaska. This is your class, he said in a scratchy voice. Then he walked back toward the front of the room. For a moment, Antaska was frozen in her tracks, but she made an effort to stir herself. She joined the other students and stood among them looking at the trainers for instructions. The two tall humans stared back unsmiling for a minute or two, looking over all their new students. Antaska felt grateful for the looseness of her clothes when she felt the eyes of first one, then the other, raking her body from top to bottom. The stares of each of them made her uncomfortable, but in different ways. A powerful thrill that somehow combined desire with fear twisted through her when the man's eyes moved slowly up her body. His face wore a slight, somewhat lecherous smile. The woman's cold, hard stare followed soon after, with her mouth set firm in a tight line. Finally, They finished their visual inspection, and the female spoke. "Welcome, new students. I am Tilde, and my partner is Igor. I see that most of you aren't used to a regular, intense exercise program. Starting now, that's going to change. In the 3 months you'll be in this class, we will work you hard. You will sweat, and you will strain. We will push and push you until you are in the best shape of your life. Do not even think about resisting. We are experts in what we do." Antaska was trying to pay attention, but Tilde's first words distracted her. She just called him her partner. Does that mean teaching partner or something else? Antaska wondered. "You will do intense cardio to burn off your extra fat and train your body to run fast if you need to," Tilde was saying. "You'll lift heavy weights to build up your puny muscles, and you'll learn martial arts for self-defense. You're about to go on a trip into unknown space where unexpected things can happen. You can count on your Verdantes to keep you safe, but they want you to be in top physical condition and to be able to defend yourself in case of an unlikely emergency. Now we'll get started." For the first hour, the instructors had the students alternate 10 minutes of running around the gym or jumping in place with 10 minutes of lifting weights. The two trainers circulated among them. They corrected their form and demanded that they work faster or harder. Anyone who slowed down in their running or lifting got embarrassing personal attention. Either the male or the female trainer would stand directly in front of the slacking exercisers, shouting into their faces. "Why are you stopping, you weak, pitiful excuse for a human? Keep moving, or I'll throw you on the floor and knock the wind from your body, and your Verdante will thank me for it." This motivation was effective, and Antaska was relieved to see that, so far, no one had ended up on the floor gasping for breath. She exercised as hard as she could to avoid personal attention, but she still found the male instructor standing in front of her when she was doing shoulder presses, lifting a heavy bar above her head 12 times without stopping. "Your form is